Hello, welcome to the Old Man Orange Podcast. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes.
And I'm Ryan Dunnigan.
And we're going ultra-classic podcasting because we're doing it together in the same room, audio only, for all the nostalgicness of true podcasting. Because Ryan's back in the homeland of California, you know, back on a two-week or so visit. And so we're going to do straight-up podcasting.
Yeah. Well, it's also just kind of like, I don't think we need the video. We have the video, cool, whatever. But, you know, it's also, I'll be honest, the first week's kind of gone by quicker than initially expected. Like, I thought they're like, oh, yeah, we'll be able to get, like, maybe at least two or three podcasts in while I'm here. And it's like beginning of week two, and I'm, like, just starting, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, there was a catch. It's like, this one was like, we meant to get this going, like, a handful of days ago, and just things kind of happened and went on, and then... Yeah, Thanksgiving and all those things and whatnot rolled together, but yeah, we finally got it. But there's something just so nice about the pure freedom of old school podcasting with our classic mic.
Well, there's something I was gonna say. It would have been perfect. I mean, it would have probably sucked for you, and I get why you declined. I totally get it. But for a minute, you're like, you know, I can't podcast today. I have an eye infection, and I literally have an eye patch. I'm like, dude, we literally could have done, like, the closest thing, like, Snake Plissken, kind of like, or even, like, Metal Gear Solid, like, could have, like, had the, like, could have done, I would have gone on, like, hey, I know we're in the same country now, but we can Skype this shit, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or StreamYard this shit, and make, you know, like, that's the closest thing we'll get to having, like, that Snake Plissken-esque look. With you with an eye patch.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Like, that would have made it for, like, we could have had a cool, like, codec, like, background and everything like that.
What could have been?
Yeah, what could have been? I didn't think about that part. I thought about doing it, like, on the video. I'd have that because I put that patch on. And I was like, oh, shit. I literally look like Keith or Sutherland, like, Snake right now. And I say that just because he's the one that's got the full beard kind of going.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You know. I want to say more like Big Boss Metal Gear Solid 3, but I was like, when I looked at myself in the mirror, I'm like, it looks more like Metal Gear 5 going right now, which, you know. It's not David Hayter, but...
Well, I do find that I won't stay on this all the whole time, but I do think it's kind of weird, like, how, like, quickly Kojima... Maybe, I'm not sure if it was Kojima or if it was, like, Konami itself, but, like, how quickly they just swept David Hayter under the rug for, like, Kiefer Sutherland. I'm like, I mean, going wrong, Kiefer Sutherland's cool and all, but, I mean...
I like me some Young Guns, but still.
Yeah. And he's not even everyone's favorite character in Young Guns. I mean, he's cool, but... But the thing is, it just seems like such a weird... I know we're going, like, 5 years back or whatever, but it just seems like such a weird thing. Like, guys, we got Kiefer Sutherland! Like, oh, you did? That's who you traded him out for? Yeah! Like, well, does he not have, like, a... straight to DVD, 24 like sequel coming out. What's going on?
It's just one of those. Well, I will say that's something that bothers me in video games is when they get like actors to be in video games. It's like no, unless it's a movie game, that's different. If it's based off a movie, like the 007 one, or let's say Evil Dead or something like that, that's okay. That's actually cooler when you can get the actual people in there. But if it's not that, like, and it's straight like a video game, it takes me out of the experience. Like, I'm the kind of person, I don't even, like, generally like voice acting in most video games, unless it's something like a Gears of War, you know, that kind of feel. Like, I'm fine with that, but I hate voice acting in, like, you know, anything of RPGs and so on like that. That's why I'm always so much more happy with Nintendo, that they stick to their guns and go, no, we don't put voice acting in games, unless it's Star Fox.
Or Legend of Zelda now.
Oh, yeah, they have a little bit in that one. But you can turn to Japanese, at least, so you don't have to...
Yeah. But at least it's one of those things where I'm just thinking, like... It's also kind of funny when you just see people coming in and doing the whole, like, we got this actor for this thing, and then you look at them in the promotion material, like, yeah, it's so amazing that I get to sit in a booth, and yeah, it's amazing. I'm really part of something important, I feel like. Like, they got Megan Fox, they're making a big deal, they got Megan Fox to voice, like, the lady with fucking wings from Mortal Kombat, and, like, even, like, motion captioned her.
Is she in that, actually?
She's in the new
Mortal Kombat, and I guess I never even put two and two together.
Yeah, she voiced that character, and she's, like, did motion caption for the character, and she's, like, the most stiff, like, I am an evil bitch with wings! You know, like, alright, cool, what else? Like, not even as much emotion I just gave
it. Like, well, I remember I was just assembling, I'm like, oh, that's cool, they brought back a character from, like, Mortal Kombat, like, Armageddon, like, that kind of era, like, the, you know, I was like, those characters don't get used as often.
And then they're like, it just seems like, yeah, we spent an extra couple grand on this, what would have been for a regular voice actor? Like, okay, whatever.
Well, that's what, I think that's what bothers me, this actually will lead into kind of what we're sort of talking later on, but... What bothers me a lot of times is that when you movie actors aren't the same as voice actors. Like, they think they're the exact same thing when they, I think that, you know, when they put them together, but, like, they never sound nearly as good because it's a, they're doing a completely different job in a weird way. Yeah, it's got acting in the title, but that doesn't mean it's identical. And I think that's what kind of bothers me is when they, like, try to put, you know, a film actor. It's the same thing. Like, it's like a theater actor, a film actor, and a voice actor are three completely different separate. And I didn't even say a radio actor. It would almost be four completely different separate things that doesn't mesh the same way, you know, as each one. Yeah, you can eventually, like, go into different ones. It's not saying that. And there's people, like, there's, like, a Robin Williams who could do multiple things and so on like that, too. But a lot of times, you know, you get people, and then they sound stiff in the voice acting position. Like, that's like, one of the number one, like, things you'll notice is that a live-action actor, like, will sound real stiff, like, in a voice acting one. Like, they don't match the character.
Yeah, no, that I've definitely noticed that in things before, where they, like, this is an easy paycheck, I just gotta come in and say this bullshit, okay, cool, they do that, they bounce on out, you know?
And I think that's what sometimes people always looked at voice acting like, oh, it's like half-ass acting, and it's like, no, actually it's like twice-ass acting.
Well, it's also, like, in some ways you get people who really throw themselves into it, and I want to say, I don't remember the actor's name, but he played Ben on Lost. He played Ben on Lost, and he was...
Lost of Us.
The Lost of Us, yeah. No, he played Ben in Lost, and he voiced the Joker in the Dark Knight Returns straight-to-DVD movie. And he was like, when I had to go into that, was actually probably the hardest I... Maybe he just sang it for some promotional shit. I don't know. Yeah. But he said, like, that honestly felt like the most I ever had to do because I never played a character that outlandish before. And I feel like I was sweating by the time I got out of the booth for that. So, you know, he's at least someone who put himself into it. And I'm not saying that, like, normal actors can't do good voice acting because they can. But it's just sometimes you could tell, you could just see it was just a publicity move or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. And I don't know, I always feel like, I know that that's why they do it, to, like, try to sell more, you know, try to sell it to them, to almost, like, the basic audience, because I don't feel like that works for the hardcore audience, of course. Like, they could care they could care less who's playing in the, like, if you get some kind of, you know, high-name profile actor to play in the next animated Batman movie. I do not think that anybody cares too much about that. But I think what they feel is, like, it's like that Disney stuff where, like, you know, oh, well, guess what? We got these big actors playing in the next thing, Disney musical animated movie. And I think they try to use that kind of concept on other animated things. And, you know, there's time and a place, but for the most part, like...
Which is like when you get some, like, sometimes you get a celebrity voice actor, I'm like, that's a pretty good choice. But then you get others where it's kind of like, look, guys, we got Paul Newman for Cars. So the grandpa in the audience could be like, I know who that is. Yeah. This dick suddenly got a lot easier to choke down, you know? But at the same time, like, I feel like on average, most people really don't give a shit. Like, okay, like, Nicolas Cage is Spider-Noir. All right, yeah, cool. That's cool. I mean, he wasn't the biggest character, but it worked. I mean, those are, I think, also cases where they really... They didn't get the biggest of the big actors for, like, say, Into the Spider-Verse. They cherry-picked people who were right for the role for that. But there often are, like, the big Disney or big DreamWorks or big whatever that just pile in stars upon stars.
Yeah, well, sometimes the worst part, too, is you'll have a series where, like, it actually has a legitimately really good voice actor, and then they kick them out and then bring in an actor in, a la Metal Gear Solid.
Well, it was weird. It was kind of weird. I remember watching, like, Solo in theaters, and then being like, that's Stephen Blum right there, you know? Or Stephen Bloom right there when, like, he was, like, a stormtrooper just in the background. Like, what the fuck are you doing here, bro? You know?
Yeah, you got a guy who can do all kinds of stuff, and he's just in the background kind of hanging out and so on, but that kind of leads us into the Scott Pilgrim one, and I will say that's probably, like, one of the one things, like, I overall really liked it, but it is that one because you sort of have, and I get why they do it, you have the actual actors from the movie that played on, like, now doing the voice acting for the cartoon, but, like, because it's a movie thing shifted to, like, a cartoon thing, I will say some of the characters do kind of feel like, it doesn't really sound like how the character looks now. It seems like there's a little bit of that stiffness there. I think it comes together as it goes a little bit farther on, but at first it has that it's not bad, but it's just like there's something it seems a little uncanny, you know?
I think it's one of those things where it didn't bother me, but I know what you're saying because we actually planned on recording this episode a lot sooner, like day after we both finished it, but then things got in the way and then it was Thanksgiving and yeah. But there definitely are characters where I felt like, because I know it's all like the same voice actors, or just about all of them, and some of them sounded different, just because I think they had to come at it from a different angle, just because they realized that, like, their voice won't match an animated character. But then there are some where, like, I can't really think of them off the top of my head. There's some that actually worked really good. Like, they changed it. Like, I thought someone who fucking killed it was Chris Evans as Lucas Lee.
Like, yeah, for the fact that he's, like, 40 years old now, too, when you think about it. Yeah, like...
And the fact that, you know, something else I appreciate, I mean, some of the actors only had a few lines, but the fact that how some of them were, like... Because I think they had all of them in it, and a lot of them went on to do bigger stuff, and how... Chris Evans isn't so above it. He's like, I'm Captain America now. I was Captain America. I don't have to do this shit. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come in. Not only that, he steals the show whenever he's on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, like, Chris Evans was totally killing it, of course, the whole way through and so on and like that. It's just, so, you know, I know what the thing is they want to have the original cast pretty much back. And I get that, because that would be kind of the one there. Though I think it's one of those ones for some of them, it's like, it probably, if you were just recasted it, like, I don't know. I guess there's some people that get weird about that kind of stuff. They're like, oh, but you can't recast. It's like, it's a live action movie. Now it's an animated one. Like that, you know what I mean? It's not like Val Kilmer's been playing Batman this whole fucking time.
Yeah. Well, it's like some of the characters, like I kind of think the mutantness kind of helped. I think it's cool that a lot of them came back. I mean, I don't know how big their paychecks were. Mm-hmm. It's Netflix money. But at the same time, I think it's cool that it's like an Academy Award winner, like Brie Larson, wasn't too big to come back and play Envy Adams, or even Anna Kendrick, only though she had like two or three lines, still came back to play Stacy Pilgrim, you know? So,
yeah.
That's cool. And like, I kind of expect someone like Michael Cera to come back for that. That's no dig against him.
Well, Michael Cera, what's he got to do? He still sounds, it's weird because it's like one of those ones I never thought, that's the one thing about that movie is like, Michael Cera, he puts 110% effort into acting that role, but he never feels like he's Scott. He always feels like he's the guy just standing in to kind of be it. And I know why. At that time period, he was like the hot stuff. They were like, he's the nerd actor, and he's from Canada. It all works out. Mm-hmm. You know, but I was always like, okay, yeah, sure. That's not really how he reads in the comic, but okay.
The way I took Scott when I read the comic, I'm like you, and like a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, I saw the movie and then retroactively went back and read the comic. And after reading the comic, I didn't take Scott Pilgrim. I mean, Michael Cera did a good job. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job. And I even think he's a good actor in general, because he's been in like other stuff since then where he's not just playing the goofy nerd character. He's been in other stuff since then.
Like, I liked him in that one where Molly's Game, where he was like...
He's like the ass. He's
like, yeah, I got you fucking bitch. What are you going to do? Fucking Sarah.
That's the one I was thinking of. But like, do you know who he's supposed to be in real life?
No, I always kind of wondered that.
He's Tobey Maguire.
Was that? God, I did not think it was Tobey Maguire. Because whenever I watched that movie, I've seen it like a couple times, and I was always like, who exactly is that guy supposed to be?
It's implied at least he's elements of Tobey Maguire. Like, I think it's Tobey Maguire. So the people that were at that bench were like Tobey Maguire, Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And then like CEOs and whatnot. So,
well, there was kind of a cool podcast where the actual Molly was on Chris Jericho's one.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It was that kind of, it was like, oh fuck, that sounds interesting. Like, I want to hear that. And she's like, I like all that movie. They make me feel like I'm a fucking genius when I'm not that smart.
Anyway, that was a good movie, so I need to check out that podcast. But he's aside from that, he's been in other stuff where he's been pretty good. So, and he's not just playing like the super bad character.
Yeah. Well, I like him overall as an actor.
But as far as Scott goes, I always thought of Scott more as a guy who, he's not like a total nerd who happened to like luck out and get like a super hot girlfriend. I view him more as a guy who is a good-looking guy, and he's really stupid, and he's kind of a himbo. Like, he's a nerdy guy, but he's kind of a himbo in a way of where his, like, you know, being, like, just being kind of, oh, I'm in a band, and I'm kind of, because I think we've all, whether we were in that phase, not being that exactly, but whether we were in that phase, whether we knew someone who was in that phase, where they were kind of like, they were just hyper-focused on, like, this or that, and they would bounce on from one thing to the other and not think about the repercussions of fucking this friend over or accidentally cheating on somebody. I think we all know somebody like that. And so I don't think Scott, like somebody who wasn't maliciously being shitty, but just being shitty just by being flaky and unreliable 20-year-old. And I think Scott is meant to be that, but just a good-looking guy. And but in the movie at the time, Michael Cera was popular, so they got him. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I think how Scott Pilgrim is able to get, say, Envy Adams, and then, like, you know, Ramona Flowers and whatever. And that one girl that was into him in the comic, but back, Lisa, you know?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. And Knives as well. And
yeah.
Well, it's almost like that one, like, it's like, and I couldn't pick think of an actor right in 2010 or whatever that would have been, like, ideal.
Emile,
like,
Hirsch?
Yeah, so actually a pretty good one right there. But that's, like, kind of ways. I feel like he's, what I was going to say is he's kind of the thing that, to cast him, I feel like you would do, like, what they do for, like, nerdy girls when you cast them. When you take kind of a hot one, you kind of dress him down. I feel like you take someone like a Chris Evans and you dress him down and, you know, make him not muscular. Not really, he'd be athletic, but not, like, you know, not Captain America. He'll be like maybe Captain America how he starts.
I think Chris Evans, it'd be impossible to have Chris Evans, like, which is a funny bit when they're like, Lucas Lee is playing him, like, in a movie. Like, I'm Scott Pilgrim. Like, but, like, the idea of, like, I could see, like, not a Chris Evans, because Chris Evans is naturally too big of a guy and too handsome. Mm-hmm. Where, say, even, say, like, someone like Emile Hirsch, who played, like, the dopey character, not dopey, but, like, the nerdy character in Girl Next Door. So it's kind of like, okay, he's a good-looking guy. Really, I don't think he'd have that much trouble getting a girlfriend. But in this context, I kind of get it. You know what I mean? Something like that, where Michael Cera, I mean, I guess you've also seen, sometimes you see the guy and the girl, like, that guy, that girl, really?
Yeah.
How big's his fucking cock, really? All right, nice work, you know?
Yeah, one of those ones like that, you never know, but yeah, as I said, that's one of those ones, like, I know kind of like, yeah, it was definitely more of a marketing ploy at that time period, but whatever, you know, you kind of got to just kind of go with it and, you know, just get into it. But once you get past all, like, that kind of stuff and you get into the Scott Pilgrim kind of, this new animated version, it is actually kind of neat how it sort of goes. How it starts off at first kind of, okay, it's, you know, here's kind of catching you up to speed if you didn't know what Scott Pilgrim sort of was.
Spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers for, yeah. So it gets you kind of caught up, tells that in about the first episode, and then right at the very end, it does kind of a, like a thing where it's like, oh shit, what just happened in that battle between Scott and Matthew Patel, like when they're in, like, the, you know, the music scene, you know, going on there. And then you sort of learn that, oh no, Matthew Patel's the one at one, and now we're on this murder mystery kind of, like, pursuit where Ramona's literally going around questioning everybody to see what actually happened to Scott, and it gives a very alternative perspective, putting a bunch of other characters together, and it makes Ramona kind of the main character, and I actually liked that part quite a bit.
I did too, and before I even saw the first episode, I saw, like, a headline, like, why they decided to give Scott the back seat. Like, no, not reading anymore. You know, just like a headline you see. Like, not, you know, don't want to know. You know?
Yep.
And then I watched it because I was like, okay. Because I figured there'd be some things different because the lead up to this, they already showed, like, because I want to say there was no interaction between the evil exes and even in the manga, or not the manga, the comic. But at the exact same time, I figured, you know, maybe they probably have a few new things just to kind of, like, spice it up a little bit or expand on some stuff. Because there's just some shots in the initial trailer that I'm like, well, I don't remember that in the comic, but that looks like something that could easily be slid in here or there. And then, like, that opening happens, like, oh, this is an entirely new, different story. And really, what it comes down to, and I'm not sure if this would use this as a template, but it really, as it went on, not initially, but as it got near the end, it really reminded me of kind of, like, Brian Lee O'Malley, or the other guy in the writing team, saw the Neon Genesis Evangelion rebuild series and thought, how can we do that with Scott Pilgrim?
You know, that probably doesn't sound that far off, you know, because you know that those guys probably did watch The Living Daylights out of that.
And there is literally an Evangelion reference in this, the AK field instead of the AT field.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, so they have that there. So, no, it makes total sense that that's kind of what it does. But it does kind of keep it in this neat kind of way to sort of take all the different variations you have of Scott Pilgrim, be in the manga or the comic book, the movie, the video game, and the animated form, and how each one's, you know, significantly different from each other.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think, because I do appreciate that about Scott Pilgrim, that, I mean, you know, the manga, I mean, the movie itself is pretty similar to the actual comic. The movie itself is really a condensed version. They had to flip some stuff around to make it make sense, and it doesn't feel ridiculously rushed. Like, I think my favorite version is still the comic, because, mm-hmm. and granted, I haven't read the comics since I first borrowed them from you and read them all, like, in a weekend. Yeah. I haven't read them since then, so I'm not sure if they'd hold up, but I'm fairly confident.
I've read them about 5 times,
yeah.
you know, throughout the years. It's like one of those ones, it's always like my go-to, like, do I just need to be kind of refreshed on, like, you know, everything? Like, mm-hmm. let me read a Scott Pilgrim. That always, like, puts the creative mood back together.
But I think it also addresses on some of the things that people, like, maybe don't, like, age as well. Like, things of the time, when we first saw it, we were Scott's age, roughly. We were, like, 22, 23 when we first saw the movie and we were reading the comic. So you're, like, dating a high schooler. I'm like, oh, that's a little weird, but that's not kind of like, that's a little weird, but he doesn't do anything with her, so okay. But now is like, you know, in your 30s, like, that's really fucking weird, dude. So they at least acknowledge it there, and they emphasize even more that nothing happened. They held hands like once.
Well, I think that's also just nowadays, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because if it was 2003 when the book first came out, not weird at all. Like, it's weird how that sort of, like, has changed as time has gone on. Or, like, slightly weird, mm-hmm. you know? You go back to, like, the 70s, normal. Yeah. Normal as fuck.
So it's like...
like, if you're not dating a high schooler, what the fuck are you doing? You fucked up.
That's how we did it in Canada. What? Yeah.
No. So it's like, well, those there is those kind of... because nowadays it feels like, no. You got about, like... 3 years up and down, that's it. No more. Any more than that, it's fucking weird. None of these old-fashioned ones where, like, parents are, like, 10 years apart from each other.
Yeah. But that right there, though, I can understand why they changed that, though, just for the thing. Because really, when you think about it, they kind of... I think this, more so than the movie, this and the comic do a better job of illustrating Scott is not a malicious... I mean, they all do a good job. He's not a malicious asshole. He's just kind of... a thoughtless dumbass.
Yeah, he's just a space cadet.
And he doesn't really... He's in his own head, and he's kind of... he's not doing things to be selfish, but he's self-centered because he doesn't think about the outcome or the consequences of things around him. And I think that this kind of nails that home even more a little bit.
Yeah, where he's just kind of like, yeah, in his zone and so on like that. I mean, yeah, that's just kind of how he is.
Yeah.
That's how I feel like... that's why I almost like, once again, it's like, when I think about him, like, when you see him as Michael Cera, it's like, it always feels kind of off, because it's like, I just picture him being kind of one of those, kind of a goofy, good-looking guy who's kind of a space cadet, like, doesn't, you know, really is thinking right at the moment, like, nothing really goes any farther than that, you know, and he likes the things that he's into, you know, and that's maybe what, he has talents, but, you know, they're talents in all weird ways.
Well, I think with him being gone, it does, because, you know, the whole... because she looks at... because you say murder mystery, it's like, Matthew Mattel murdered him. What are we talking about? But then they look at the security footage, and a portal appears beneath him, and a hand comes out and pulls him through the portal. So it's... he's not really dead. So that gives you a little bit of hope, like, okay, cool. So... because mm-hmm. for a minute, it feels like, are they just doing this thing, this subject... because when he first disappeared, I was like, okay, I'm very intrigued. I want to know this goes. At the same time, I also hope you're not just entirely getting rid of the whole point of the series in the first place. Or like, we got rid of the problematic character, so now here we're not doing that shit, you know? But they expand on everybody, and they kind of give... and this really kind of works out for its benefit, because it even gives more time to flesh out the exes, really.
Yeah, and all the other characters that don't have as much, you know, stuff in the previous ones, or even characters that have good stuff, but then it's, like, even more. Like, I mean, Wallace Wells himself just gets tons of great scenes. Because he's always one of my favorite characters.
He steals the show, yeah.
You know, and this one's just like, God, they give him so much great stuff to work with, and I just like how he just takes full advantage of everything in front of him to, like, the most.
We're jumping ahead here, but I thought one of the funnest things, because the big plot twist is, of the series, is... Scott was kidnapped by himself from the future. And the idea is, this thing takes place not in today. This thing still takes place like when the first book came out. It's like 2003, 2004, around that area. So even in this world, today is like somewhat dystopian and futuristic. And so I thought that was funny. They kind of nailed that's the world that Scott's in. He's with even older Scott. And you think... oh, wow, he's going to be some kind of, like, wasteland where... he's like, no, he's living in Wallace's garage still. And Wallace has this crazy, like, glass cybernetic house. And then they have, like, this moment, like, should we tell him who Wallace's husband is? Like, what? Wallace's husband works for Nintendo. Like, what?
It, like, blows his mind.
Or just the idea of, like, since he gets to play all the games, you know? So the idea of, like, that is such a generational joke, just the idea of, like, dude, my dad works for Nintendo or something like that.
Yeah, like, you'd hear one of those ones where it's like, oh, dude, this guy's, like, uncle over here, he's a tester for Sega, and he's like, he gets to bring home all the games. Like, what? That's the best thing ever.
It was always bullshit, but the idea...
No, this was real.
You know some of the actually...
Pat had an uncle that, like, worked for... He was, like, a tester in the 90s for Sega.
Pat was the unicorn, huh?
So, yeah, he actually had an uncle that, like... I don't know if he brought home all the games, but, you know, that's what his job was, you know, is he tested for Sega.
They made it out to be, like, there's this Beauty and the Beast library... like a big screen TV, and we're like, this is the only way you could play Sega here, and they also have Sega Channel 24/7, you know. But
and then there was one time I remember I ran into a house where like I was setting up TV for some old people, and then they had this collection, like a pristine collection of Atari 2600 games, and they're like, oh yeah, our son used to work at Atari back in the 70s, so they gave him one of each card and so on like that. And it was like, holy fuck.
Why so many E.T. carts in here?
Yeah, they were just going to toss them out anyway, so here, he decided to load them back in the VW.
Started using them as coasters.
Yeah, I'm wiping my ass with it.
But,
And then I had plumbing troubles. I wonder what that was all about.
Yeah. But then, like, I just think that, you know, that was just such a generational thing. I guess a lot of Scott Pilgrim is generational, you know, specifically to millennials and a little bit of, like,
it's more like Generation X, realistically.
I feel like it's
the movie's millennials, but if you really think about the book, if you're doing it off Scott's age, it's like that's that last section
young of, Generation X.
It's the total ending section of Generation X.
It's like it's like millennial and then younger Generation X is kind of one of those.
Yeah, like the total tail end. The one that I always feel like we relate more to is that version than like what people say is like the textbook definition of millennial. Because when you hear like a textbook definition, you're like, I feel like I'm on the wrong side of that line.
Yeah, it all varies, you know. We're all individuals.
You know, I think
we don't all like have man buns and like.
Yeah, well, because I always think there's when it comes to any generation thing, there's actually two sections of every single one, and people like they pick one, they assume that's the main one. You know, it's just like Generation X. People when they think of like generations, they think of like, you know, people in like 90s kind of like alternative outfits and so on like that. I'm like, The Breakfast Club is also Generation X, too, but nobody ever says that.
Yeah, you don't think about that.
You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't get put into that same category.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But, no, I do think it is, like, primarily a young Generation X and millennial kind of very centric story. And maybe it'll have more cross... I mean, I'm sure that, like, there's Zoomers that grew up watching it that liked it, you know, so maybe this one will expand on that too, who knows. But I do like that just when they reveal even older Scott, though, you know, the who's the villain of the series, even though he's still like a fucking dumbass, I love his character design. I want an action figure of even older Scott, you know. He kind of has the whole like Akuma Ryu thing and the crazy beard and hair, you know.
Did it make you feel weird when you saw Wallace Wells and they said that was Wallace Wells at 37 years old? He's like, he looks old as fuck.
I think that's part of the joke, because when you are in your... Because like he had naturally white hair already.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, what?
Well, it's even when you look at everyone else, because like even Scott, like, it's like old Scott, 37. I think that it's like, shit, I'm 36 now, so fuck. But at the same time, old Scott still seems kind of like... That's the joke. When you were like 22 or 21, the idea of being 37 sounds so fucking old. You know what I mean? That sounds so old. You might as well be at death's door. So I think that's kind of the joke. And plus, someone like Scott kind of fell into a depression, didn't take care of himself. So with that right there, and then Ramona looks fantastic still. Even when they jump even older Ramona, she still looks great. She just has a few wrinkles under her eyes.
And, I think she's technically supposed to be older than all of them anyways.
I think she is older. Yeah.
She always expected her being like, I kind of, if you sort of gauge all the stuff together of what she does, she's supposed to be like 26.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's 3 years older than Scott.
Well, something I think they did a good job is because when I think back on the comic, like Ramona, she is, at times she comes across as kind of heartless and cold when she talks about the past, and they do that the same thing here. Like she's somebody who has a past, and she's a little she feels a little bad about it, but this one, since it focuses on her more, we get to see more of that. We get to see her develop more, too, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just so like, I did this one time, and I felt kind of bad about it, you know? Now we actually see her reconcile with the exes one way or the other.
Yeah, no, as I said, it adds even more kind of stuff there and so on, you know? And that even has kind of interesting crossovers between characters that never saw, you know, each other in the comics or anything like that. Which makes it kind of a neat where you see their certain interactions and so on. Just like when you get the fifth ex, the girl ninja one, where her and Kim hanging out, like, it's like, that's like, okay, you never saw that.
Yeah. Well, there's also the part where episode 2, where it lets you know you're in for something vastly different, when Matthew Patel goes in and summons all the other exes, and they all basically, you have a fight between Gideon and Matthew Patel on top of a building in the pouring rain, and like, well, this is vastly different. This goes, you know, and you actually get to see all the exes interact with each other for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I thought that was something interesting, and they even go as far as giving Gideon more to do other than just being like, because in the comics, it was interesting because in the comics he is just kind of like a very douchey control freak. There's real no reason to like him or feel bad for him at all. And then in the movie, since he's played by, I think, Jason Schwartzman,
mm-hmm.
he's, even though he's being fake nice, it's Jason Schwartzman, so he's able to pull up some of the funniness a little bit more. Where in this, he's that good middle ground of the two.
Yeah. You know, and in this one here, too, it's like Matthew Patel, like, you know, beats him right there, and then he takes over the Empire and so on. And then you just have Gideon, like, out on the street, like, nowhere to go.
Yeah, well, and he goes, they also do more with Julie, because Julie was just kind of like, she was just there, and she was just kind of, like, irritating and kind of like a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this one, I mean, granted, they're getting Aubrey Plaza to play her still, and she's known for being kind of like the mean, like, whatever kind of girl, but I think they gave more with her. They gave her more to do, and she wasn't, because she also kind of folded easily. Like, she, like, Julie was originally a real ass kisser to, like, Envy, where this, she wasn't as much of that. She was more of just above everything else, where she actually found, like, oh, he's an asshole? That's hot. So that gives him a reason to be an asshole and try and build up his rank again, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Be dicks. And I just like the interesting combos. I even like just even Steven Stills and Knives become mm-hmm. friends, because Knives all of a sudden just learns how to play music. And then that kind of adds like a cool, like, extra dimension to the band anyways. I was like, oh, you have Knives on keyboard? I almost like that even more.
Yeah.
Sex Bob-omb have four people in the band.
Well, just the idea that she's like, oh, how long have you been practicing bass? What time is it now? Four? Oh, yeah, I've been practicing for 3 hours. Yeah. This is after 3 hours? Yeah. How long have you been practicing on the keyboard? What time is it? Like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it just gives, like, one of those kind of things. But I think that just kind of adds, it gives some characters just, like, you know, I mean, granted, you know, in the book, we're focusing on Scott and Ramona and all that kind of stuff, so, you know, it's one of those ones. It's easier to kind of, like, retrospect. You're like, look, they add more things for everybody to do. It's like, well, yeah, but there's, you know, other page space that's taken away, you know, because, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that there's that kind of thing. This is more just, like, it's alternative, so, like, you can have all these other kind of scenes kind of building up and so on, you know. Or even just, like, one of the other ones, I like the one where, like, Gideon's just, like, hanging out at the house or whatever. And he's got the No Fear t-shirt on, which is, like, yeah, that to me is, like, one of the most... I remember, because, like, I was trying to tell Laura about the No Fear guy. The little, like, the guy with the white hair and everything like that.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I could not find a picture of him on the internet to save my life. Like, almost like one of those ones, like, did it really exist? I know it did!
I know what you mean, yeah.
But, like, I was looking up, I was like, No Fear kid, No Fear guy, No Fear man, No Fear 90s kid. It's like, nothing would pop up. I was like, he was, like, scrubbed from the internet for some reason.
He kind of had, like, in this, not to derail it for too long, but he was kind of, like, hunched over. He was kind of, like, flexing his arm, kind of like,
yeah,
this.
He always flexes his arm.
And he had, like, kind of spiky hair.
Kind of like Guile, maybe, but white.
And he was, like, always frowning, right?
Yeah.
And did he have, like, No Fear on his arm or something like
something
that?
Something like that.
Or maybe it was over
shirt,
above
or
him.
Something
yeah.
like that. But he was always, like, giving, like, the one-eyed bitch look, kind of like, you know, one of those things. And it was, like, it was the shirt made. It was, like, literally a shirt made, but, like, are you the bully at your school?
Yeah.
No Fear shirt. Or are you the kid who wants to be the bully at your school, but you know you're never going to be, but at least he'll give you maybe a minor chance to look like it? No Fear shirt.
Well, so I just liked, I always wore No Fear shirts, because I had none. You know, like, it's still kind of like, like it has like a lot of that kind of dialogue in it. Because what's also interesting is actually it's an actual Japanese anime studio that made it. It's not a studio trying to look like an anime.
Yeah,
it's an actual Japanese anime studio. And they have Brian Lee O'Malley.
Let's be honest. Every American movie or cartoon's been pretty much a Japanese anime for the last 35 years.
Since Teen Titans, just about. Yeah.
No. Before that, all those old ones are all made.
Oh, because they
even Batman and all that stuff is all made overseas. Like, it's weird to think about it, but
it's either shipped to Japan or Korea.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, they draw, here's what Batman looks like. Now draw this 10,000 more times.
Yeah. Faster!
Make him better! Yeah. You know, it's one of those ways. It is the weird thing. I don't think Americans have really drawn their own cartoons for, and probably even longer. Probably since the 60s was probably the last time they drew the majority of the panels themselves.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, but yeah, like, just the things they do with him and, like, how he becomes just kind of the lazy lounge-about boyfriend to Julie, just crashing on the couch, watching, like, Moe anime or something like that. And then at some point, like, Lucas Lee joins, because he loses all his money and fame, too. And he just ends up over there, and they become instant bros. And then they're watching, like, they're watching some anime that seems all over the place. And he's just like, look, there's like, you really warm up to this character in time. You know, it takes 8 seasons to get to this point.
He's like, I can let you borrow him. I got him on DVD. You know, I just like they just start like the total like it just reminds me of like hanging out back in like the 90s where it's like okay, like well I mean they play like paintball in there but it reminds me of like Nerf War where you just have in the house and whatnot and they're like well Julie, let's build a skateboard park inside here
and then like Julie comes home she's like I was only gone for 2 hours
it's like everything's destroyed
a lot of that kind of humor but then there's also the thing with like say like Roxy Richter which I thought did a good job like she that actor I didn't even recognize the voice and I could tell she was putting on a lot more of a different voice for the sake of being animated because I think that's the same actress I don't know.
See yeah because that was one of those ones too where it feels a little bit kind of weird like she was one of the characters that does feel slightly off just for like the animation look.
But I think like her voice sounded like she was putting on a different voice. Maybe it was a different voice actor. I don't know. But she actually sounded like she was putting a different voice on, and I think that kind of worked for me personally. That worked to the benefit of the show. But like hers, like I didn't think that she was going to have like this big emotional moment. But she has this moment where she's basically bawling and crying to Ramona. And it feels legitimate, where before she's just fighting Scott Pilgrim, like, you're a pussy! And she falls back. That part where she's fighting and, like, there's that one panel, like, you're a pussy! It goes, like, 2 panels of her falling or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I thought that most, and, like, even the Lucas Lee one, you kind of, with the exception of, like, say, Gideon and the twins. The twins, like, they're just kind of there, really. They don't really... They have a little bit.
Yeah, they realistically are the only ones that don't really have a whole lot. I mean, they're there, and you know, but the robot takes more of the precedence than anything else.
But that's even kind of funny because, like, when they're confronting every single like X, like, was it you? Was it you? Was it you? And when they get to the twins, like, no, the robot it's like its processor is kind of like Dr. Manhattan, where it feeds in everything at once. So it goes to the twins like, oh, the robot told us that that we're friends in the future, so we stopped fucking with you. Like, oh, okay. So just kind of shit like that. And they even taught, like, and like I like how, like, when Scott was bored, they did, like, a jet set radio-style band.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's why I thought was kind of interesting in the future. That was kind of their big thing there for the twins and whatnot.
So they do a little bit more with them.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, not as much as, like, all the other characters and so on. Just sort of like Todd. Todd also has a lot going on in this one, too.
Well, they add another layer for it. Like, oh, Todd's, like, closeted, or at least bi, because he starts hooking up with, like, Wallace and starts cheating on Envy.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with that is, like, he's suddenly the one being fucked around with. And he's, like, because, like, they're basically making a movie about, they're essentially making the Scott Pilgrim movie. At some point. Because Scott Pilgrim dies, and it's this big news about this kid who died in a fight, and then, like, they're gonna make a movie about it, and they start doing that, and they hire Lucas Lee to play Scott Pilgrim. So he's this big jack dude, like, hello, I'm Scott Pilgrim, you know? And they Wallace plays himself, and at some point, Lucas leaves, and Brandon Ruth's character, Todd, is taken over, and they have like, and he's cheating on Wallace the whole time with it. He's cheating on Envy the whole time with Wallace.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a cluster of all stuff when you kind of explain.
Yeah, it's like I kind of need a board with wires going.
They lead it there.
Like, and if you've never seen anything Scott Pilgrim and you hear this episode, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Jumbled.
Yeah.
You know? Well, because even to top it off, like, the guy who writes the script for some reason is young Neil. Like, he just, for some reason, just has, like, epiphany in the middle of the night and then has a script ready to go. And it sounds weird. Young Neil almost sometimes feels like he plays the Scott Pilgrim role, like, the way that you would almost think of it. Because he plays it like that. Hey, man. Yeah, I'm just here hanging out. Just kind of a space cadet. You know what I'm saying? I have the script. I turn it in. Look at me. I'm making movies now.
Well, Scott, well, young Neil, the thing that's funny about him is he's, like, Scott, but dumber.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what he is. Because he almost feels like... It almost feels like young Neil could just be Scott Pilgrim's, like, younger brother. Like, he's almost kind of made like he's there. He's just, oh, he's just hanging out. But instead, it's just, no, he's just a guy kind of... He's more like Stephen Stills, like... I don't know where the... this thing, he's just there. I think that's what it's supposed to be. He's supposed to be that guy who's just there. You don't really know whose friend he really is, where he really came from, what he really adds. He's just always there.
Well, for, say, someone like... It's kind of an interesting... I'm not sure if this is intentional, but say, like, Scott Pilgrim, for instance. Like, he is somebody who has, like, lofty ambitions and goals and has no idea how to get there, so he just kind of, like... aimlessly floats from thing to thing, ultimately making things in his life worse for himself. Where young Neil, he's kind of like Scott, but he doesn't really have ambition, but the things just kind of flow to him naturally. He doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
Or he just happens to luck out. And the script just kind of comes to him, and it just comes to him one night. He says, like, it was written by a sleep paralysis demon. Like, what? You know, and then you find out it was the big plot is Scott from himself. Older Scott from the future kidnaps current day Scott Pilgrim, so he would not meet Ramona, because he and Ramona end up getting divorced later in life. And then Ramona thought their story still had a chance and still should be told, so she wrote a script herself and left it on young Neil's, like, desk. He's like, oh, I guess I wrote a script last night.
Yeah, he just goes along with it and so on like that, you know. And yeah, just everything just sort of falls in young Neil's lap along the way here. And then he writes a memoir later on called, like, Old Young Neil.
Yeah. And then, you know, so it's kind of like, I think you could watch this without watching anything else, but I think watching something else before, the movie or reading the comic before this would help.
Yeah, I feel if you didn't.
What's the point?
I feel like I think you'd want to be, you actually would probably be pretty lost. And it would be one of those ones, I don't think a lot of stuff would be like, who cares? Like, you know what I mean? I think there'd be a lot of that. Like, why do I care? Like, I don't know who these characters are.
I think it's not that it's hard to follow in that way. I mean, the way we talk about relationships, because a lot of it is partway really a relationship comedy at the end of the day, aside from all the anime battles.
Yeah.
Really, I think reading the comic, or at least watching the movie before this, would help. Like, if you don't even want to put in the time investment to reading the comic... That's fair. If you watch the movie, you'll get the general gist.
Yeah.
And then you could watch this, and that would take some stuff from the comic as well as some stuff from the movie. You
know? Yeah, that kind of... I mean, or if at least, if anything, play the video game. That could kind of work, too. That would at least give you somewhat of an idea. But yeah, I feel like... Yeah, if you went into this one, but first... I'm not saying you couldn't get into it, because, you know, there's always those weird things where, like, sometimes you get into something and you don't really put things together, but it still kind of clicks. Mm-hmm. I still think it might be one of those ones where you're like, what the... Like, you would understand what's going on, but you would still be like, why do I... You wouldn't have that same care, because you don't know the backstories of everything the same way. You know, because it definitely plays on a lot of the stuff. Like, you know who these are, you know what the story's supposed to do, and this is where we twist around at. Like, you know, it's definitely made, I think, for a target audience.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too. I think, on average, yeah... Definitely, if you already like Scott Pilgrim, no reason not to check this out. And yeah. If you already, but yeah, I don't know. Either way, you already summed it up best, really.
Yeah, it was one of those ones. It's pretty cool. I mean, I kind of wish it would just... I hope it comes on Blu-ray or something like that so I can actually own a physical copy of it.
I think it will.
I think so. They've been pretty good about releasing so many. I mean, like, all those Castlevania ones and all that stuff come out on Blu-ray, and I see other shows of Netflix do that, too. You know, it sounds weird. It's just like, I don't know, I feel like... Well, there's certain things, it's like, I want to go in my collection, so I can put my books, you know, I can put the Blu-rays, I can put the video game, I got them all in physical, you know? So... The cool, neat thing about this, I kind of hope in the long run, is that it makes, hopefully Brian Lee O'Malley can get back to making another comic book, because it sure has been a long time.
It's not Girl on Hold?
That one's been on hold for a while. They did, I think, 3 volumes. I had all of those, and he only writes that, or he half writes it.
Yeah.
So, that one, it's like, that's kind of like a... It's like a holdover piece, and I don't remember, I like it. It's got really cool artwork in it, too, but, like, it's not like... It's like you're not getting the full package.
It's not like getting seconds.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like if you get, like, a comic book, you're like, oh, cool, Frank Miller. You're like, oh, he just did the cover. Well, not really a Frank Miller story now, is it?
Well, I think it's story-wise, at least. Yeah, it's like... At least he's writing it, you know? Because I saw some Scott... I saw some Brian Lee O'Malley... Between reading all of Scott Pilgrim in seconds, and then reading Snot Girl. I didn't finish all of Snot Girl. I got volume 1, and I liked what I read. I can kind of see the Scott Pilgrim humor and Brian Lee O'Malley-ness to it in that aspect. But it would be nice to, whether it's something Scott Pilgrim related or something new, it'd be cool for him to come out with something else again.
Yeah, because I'll take anything if it's brand new or something like that. But it's that kind of thing that, like, there is that sort of thing, and I know what happens is when people especially get farther in life, I think especially when you're not, like, artist first. I think there's a lot of people who's like, well, I did the art because I kind of had to.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I always feel like that's how Frank Miller is as well, too. He's like, I did the art because I had to, but now if I don't really have to, like, it's kind of hard for me to, like, want to go out and fully draw a comic anymore. But, like, sometimes I kind of hate to first say it, but I'm like, sometimes when you draw it, though, that's what makes it even better. It feels more like it's you.
As somebody who's at that point where I literally, because I realize it's taken me too long to draw my thing out, and I am... Because if I draw it, it's too easy for me to go, like, I don't like this, restarting this, it's too easy. Where if I actually, not to sound like, pay, like, I'm not like, I just chuck a wad of money out the window, someone will do it. Not like that, but I mean, I finally just buckled down, I'm just going to hire an artist for this thing. And now I'm like, well, I can't go back now. I paid this guy.
Yeah.
And his artwork immediately looks better than mine. So I'm stuck with it. I can't go back and rewrite this thing. I mean, I could rearrange the dialogue, but I can't rewrite the whole story now.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I'm talking about more like a Frank Miller than somebody that, like, that's...
Oh, not comparing myself to that. Just clarifying.
I'm just saying, like it's one of those ones, like... It's something just kind of like I like seeing, like, the actual artist sort of, because after a while you'll start seeing them where, like, they'll jump off and they'll start writing and so on. I get it. It's a lot of fucking work. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and if you don't have to work, like, I see where, like, you know, I think that's where, like, Brian Lee O'Malley, it's like, he's been able to, in a sense, milk Scott Pilgrim for 25 years. Like, I don't think he's ever had to do really any extra work. Like, Seconds is more like a bonus project. That probably made no big amount of money compared to, like, all the Scott Pilgrim, like, revenue that comes in. And it's, like, one of those ones, too, where it's, like... And Scott Pilgrim's already such a niche thing, as is. You can't just go talk to... It's not like it's other comic book things that's, you know... But it's just big enough that I think that it always has trickled in. And then you'll see there'll be Scott Pilgrim action figures or tabletop games and other things that kind of have come out over the years. So I think there's just always, like, okay, cool, that held me over for another 3 more years. Keep going. You know? And then when you have something like this, I bet you the comic book sales... And the DVD sales and all that stuff start going, and it comes back and get together again when the video game got re-released, like, literally a year or two ago.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's something, like, I don't know, his finances, I don't know how it all works, but at the exact same time, I guess that Scott Pilgrim is a thing that does... I can think of it being, like, as far as comic go, I think it just really speaks to our generation as well as part of Generation X, just because... It was the first time, I know there are plenty of indie comic books out there, and even indie movies that showed representations of this, but Scott Pilgrim is one of the first things I feel like really, that I saw at that time, that really nailed down the thing of being an aimless 20-year-old, and the idea of, like, when they show Wallace's room, like, Wallace in your mind is, in Scott's mind, is the guy who has it together, and the way he carries it is someone who has it together. Really, when you look at Wallace's room, it's a single studio little room that looks like it's maybe part of someone's garage, and it, like...
He's just well-organized.
He's just well-organized, and he's like, do me wrong, I'm not talking shit. For being, like, however old Wallace is, like, 21, 22, that's a fine setup, it works, you know, but the idea of, like, oh, look, the computer that, you know, we don't have room for it. So the computer is basically on this little, like, you know, nightstand, and you have to sit on the ground to use the computer. There's no, like, bed frame for the bed. It's just a mattress on the ground. Like, that type of shit, like, I didn't see that for a while in a lot of, like, things that are about people in their 20s, you know?
Well, because that's because a lot of comic books are either teenagers or they're 30-year-old pluses. Like,
yeah.
There's not really as much of that. I think that was the thing that's sort of different. It's like, it's not even like a, it's like a post-college book. And I think that's the thing. You do see, of course, a lot of it after Scott Pilgrim, because it created that sort of wave. I guess the same way that Clerks created a different kind of wave, you know, where you had the workplace comedy kind of things like that. Because in a sense, Clerks is in that same category in a weird way. They're about the exact same age as Scott Pilgrim, aimlessly hanging out, you know, in that sort of sense. But it's, yeah, that section wasn't nearly, you know, as hit upon as often. And I think that almost is, like, very hard. I think that's why Scott Pilgrim, like, when it first kind of came out and everything like that, was like, oh, shit, like, it hits perfectly. Like, you know, I like video games. I play, you know, music. You know what I mean? Like, I'm into creative stuff. You know, like, all these different things all form together in here. And then the artwork's like, it's like that kind of artwork that's really cool looking, but it looks like it's almost, like, easy enough to do. Like, it's not like a Jim Lee piece or, you know, one of those ones where you're like, eh, forget about it. He started when he was, what, 2?
Yeah. Well, it's also something like, I think Scott Pilgrim just checks off a bunch of these boxes, just is not just like this or that, just as a franchise itself. Like, it captures that really early 20s-ness, and it feels very genuine. Like I said, the example I made of Wallace's Room, but also just the thing about, there's that period where you start going to, like, parties, and you kind of fall in, like, a little bit of, like, this crowd over here with that crowd over here. Oh, that guy was dating that person, this person was dating that person, which that should be just, like, that's fucking stupid. But then you do the thing of, like, oh, but treat them like video game bosses, and along the way make references to, like, very 90s and late 80s specific video games. Then it suddenly kind of clicks in more. They even change some of the things. Like, I wonder if, like, yo, Sonic's bigger, so we gotta make more Sonic references. Because there were Sonic references in the movie as well as in the comic, but this had more. Just because even the whole thing with, like, how you saw Sonic Sad AM and Sonic Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog instead of Pac-Man. You know?
I actually kind of like that, because that to me, I felt like probably in the movie, they're like, you know what, we're gonna have to hit a broader audience. Hit him with the Pac-Man one.
Yeah.
And I think by this point, they're like, you know what, this is probably more, we'd rather have almost this kind of in here.
Sonic's kind of bigger than ever right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not as big as the 90s, but bigger than...
Yeah. Well, I also like that too, like, where Wallace is like, don't mention Sonic to the two of them. Oh, Sonic the Hedgehog!
And then, like,
I even like too when there's at the end, they're like, it's just like the, you know, just like the, you know, Sonic's transformation in Sonic 2. I mean 3. Yeah. Like the old Sonic,
he
like kinda, the old.
He catches himself.
Like, he kind of forgot by that point because he's old. Yeah. But, like, yeah, like, well, I felt like that kind of works more because that feels more like a very, like, Scott thing. I mean, I think it's like an issue or book 3. It's book 3 or 4. They literally have the Sonic the Hedgehog 2 all in super color, like Ramona and Scott thing.
Yeah.
Scott
Pilgrim gets it together, I think.
Yeah, so it's like, it is totally in there. And I think that's the other big thing about Scott Pilgrim, is it was the first kind of book that I remember seeing, or even just story, where it kind of put video games in there, and it treated it like, oh no, video games could be among all the cool kids, and all the cool people too, and nobody questions it. Because that was always the weirdest thing, I just remember even growing up at that time period, it was like, how do we implement video game-ness into, you know, other mediums, you know? And, like, nowadays it doesn't seem like it's any question whatsoever. Like, the upside of the last 15 years is that totally normal. But, like, in the olden days, like, if it was, like, 2003, and you're like, how do I incorporate video or, like, a song about a video game I like? It was asking for a lot of scrutiny of, like, how are you going to go about this, you know? And that was, like, growing up, I just remember that was the thing. It's like, how, we should just do a band where it's all kind of, like, you know, almost like Mario themed, which nowadays you do that and people are like, fuck yeah, that's fucking amazing. But, like, almost then you're like, God, like, what's this going to be like going out, like, dressed up like Mario and Luigi fucking on stage? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to con two girls into being Daisy and Peach.
Yeah. If you want to play the bass, anyone know how to play drums?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, is you think about where, like, nowadays, nobody would even question that. That's already an instant idea. Like, what, that's the theme of your band? Come on in.
I don't mean to derail it too much, the focus on that, just the idea of, like, two people, like, okay, I'm Mario, you're Luigi, so I'm the lead singer, you're the lead guitarist, now he's gonna find two girls to play bass, and drums, and then the idea, like, you get one girl who can play bass, you can't find someone to do the drums. You're like, oh, let's just get someone's uncle. He could be Wario.
Yeah, exactly. That was literally an idea me and Cisco had, though, like, in, like, 2002 or 3. I was like, let's get a band and try to do this. It's gonna work out.
Why not? I'd see it.
As I said, it sounds like an amazing idea nowadays. I said, it felt like the most riskiest idea back in the day.
Well, now, before, but like, you know, you just get like a big red helicopter with an N on it, like, guys coming down and swap you, like, go!
Yeah.
All your proceeds now!
But back then, they would have no idea what the, like, what? What are they doing in America? You know?
Let them do it.
And I think that's the other thing that also makes Scott Pilgrim actually, like, one of the most perfect kind of things, is it captures that time period right before the internet really took over everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's there, but it's not the end-all thing in, you know, 2000. They kind of progress a little bit more once you get farther in the books, because that's about the only thing that's kind of weird about the books is...
It's like a year to come out.
It's
each.
2003, and then I think 2009 is the sixth one, but by the last, like, two or three books, they do kind of, like, really start to adopt, like, new trends in there. When you feel like it, like, you're like, well, book-wise, it still feels like it's, like, maybe 2005.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it progresses more than, like, 2 years in the entire story.
Well, he does have a PSP by, like, some point in it, yeah.
Well, yeah, Young Neil does, I think.
Like, the last book, he just, like...
When he's depressed,
he's just playing a PSP the whole time.
But PSP came out in, I guess, 2005 or something.
2005, that would make sense then, yeah.
You know, but yeah, there's something... Well, even in the show, there was one reference in there that was, like... That it, like, almost, like, took me out of the time zone, because when she mentions about, like... She's like, oh, like, a successful detective. And she's like, what, like, Columbo? And I like how Ramona gives, like, the fucking old school reference. I'm like, that, there we go.
Yeah.
I love that. But then he's like, oh, I was thinking more like Detective Pikachu. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any logical sense, because I don't think Detective Pikachu came out until, like, 2013.
That's a good point.
It was just one of those ones, like, I know that's, like, that thing. Whenever I think about that, when people put those kind of jokes in there, I kind of go, did that just not cross, like, at least, if one person was writing it, I could see that being like, okay, whatever. But, like, you know that everybody else has to hear that and be like, are we going to go with that one? I mean, we haven't mentioned anything else that throws it off out of there. Like, we could find another detective thing that could fit in an older frame that could be kind of goofy and dumb.
Like the anime with the kid, where the guy, where he's a guy, he turns into a kid, but he's still a detective. I forgot what it's called, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. You know.
It was on Adult Swim. I forgot what it's called, though.
Or even, you know, you could find just...
Hardy Brothers. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, the Hardy Brothers or like...
But yeah, but
you know what I mean. As I said, if you think hard enough, you can find something.
Most of the references, though, hit, and most of the references don't seem to get in the way. They help it one way or the other. I do think that Scott Pilgrim is like a unicorn in that way, because it feels like when Scott Pilgrim came out, it was very genuine on all aspects of what it was. Where a lot of things now, not saying there isn't like actual love in the things they're aping, but it feels like it's trying really hard to be like a Scott Pilgrim, or it's trying really hard to force like this like nerd culture shit in there, but it doesn't have any real reason. It has no real place or reason to be at work. I think it works for Scott Pilgrim because in my mind it was always, it's in the world of a brawler video game. So where like, and they never flat out said this, but it's just how I always took it. Mm-hmm. It's in the world of a video game. Primarily a fighting video game or a brawler.
Yeah, like so, River City Ransom pretty much is what I always think.
Yes.
Like the core thing.
So on your way to a party, you might get into a big fight with some, like, with some just random ruffians out there. And it's not a big deal when someone dies and explodes into coins. On to the next thing.
Yeah.
To date a girl, you would have to deal with a bunch of exes or some shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's just the way I viewed it when it came out.
Oh, yeah. And I think it was just, it's that mixed match of, you know, it's video game. It's all Japanese kind of culture stuff thrown into, like, Canadian blender.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like the other one too is like Ranma One Half, because like you read that first book of Ranma One Half and you go, holy crap, that is like the start of Scott Pilgrim right there, so much so. Like when she gets to school and she's like, oh yeah, I gotta fight all these guys every single time I come there. They want to date me or whatever like that. She's like, eh, just it's something I gotta do every single day. You know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like doesn't question it too much. This is just what I gotta do.
This is just life here.
Yeah. You know, so... There's so much of that kind of stuff in there. And I think that's what makes it kind of neat. As I said, sometimes it's like most ones, there is some of those like knockoff ones where you can tell that they're not doing Scott Pilgrim exactly, but they kind of got that post-college, like, goofy kids in the city kind of thing. And it, you know, sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't, you know, but, there's...
I think if there's something about that where... And this isn't about Scott Pilgrim per se, just more of that genre in general.
Yeah.
That indie comic genre. when you're like a kid and you're bullied at school, you see something like Spider-Man, you're like, wow, it's just like me for real though, you know, and then you see like other things doing the whole thing like, you know what it's like to be bullied at school, doesn't it fucking suck? And it starts to feel very disingenuous, you know? And then there you see something like, say, like, it doesn't have to be Scott Pilgrim, but just, old, you know, we're already talking about Scott Pilgrim, you know, and just like, oh, wow, that post-college or during-college life and the awkwardness of that age and the things that come along with that, and you see that represented, like, oh, cool, and then you see somebody like, oh, I could probably pull that shit off, too, so it kind of feels the same thing, like, oh, another thing about college student, about just finishing college and feeling aimless and not knowing where to go in life, yeah, or this or that, you know?
And it's not saying that, you know, because, you know, everybody's got their own different relatable kind of books, yeah, or stories. It's going to hit them in different ways and so on. It kind of reminds me of, like, bowling. There was that Mortal Kombat 4 movie that came out. It was a Johnny Cage. I say 4 just because it's the fourth animated one. It's kind of a standalone one, but there's a part where it's like, it starts, Johnny Cage's like, I was bullied when I was younger, and stuff. I was like, oh no, it's not gonna be one of these, like, PSAs on bullying that you see in, like, or bullying you see in, like, so much stuff in the last 10 years. And then it's just like, and then I learned martial arts from a guy that looked like Chuck Norris, pretty much, and then he's like, I went back to school and I learned that, you know what, the only way to stamp the bullies is to kick their fucking ass. And it just shows this bullying fucking Johnny Cage. He grabs his arm, twists it back, punches it in the elbow, and just shatters it like a Mortal Kombat move. He's like, and that guy never bullied me ever again. I was like, there we go, thank you. I thought it was going to try to pull some kind of crap, like,
hey guys, like, yeah, hands on the hips,
hey guys, fighting's not cool, like, don't you dare tell me this isn't a Mortal Kombat story.
Friendshipality. Yeah. And everything is solved with friendshipality.
Yeah, like, well, we can't do fatalities anymore, but yeah, no, you know, that's the thing, you know, Scott Pilgrim encapsulates all that kind of stuff. And I really always wanted to see a sequel to Scott Pilgrim. This thing, I guess this story does have, you know, someness to it, but I always thought that would be kind of neat. I know some people would probably be like, that's blasphemy, no sequels. They're the same people that said, no sequels to The Last of Us and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, the second one's kind of better, but... you know, whatever, I'd take a third one. I'm waiting for the third one where, like, Ellie comes in, she's got a fucking eye patch on. Never explain it. Never. Just, she has an eye patch on, she's at the bar, she's like 48 years old right now, smoking a cigarette, and someone be like, seen a lot of shit in my day. I kill people. Sometimes for fun. I just want fucking middle-aged Ellie out there just fucking killing people and just living off, like...
There's no more infected.
I can't have friends.
She's already killed all the infected. It's just now it's just a matter of just, like, she just needs to scratch that itch.
Yeah. You know, I tried to have the home life. It wasn't for me.
Even though I play this guitar thinking of Joel, it doesn't help none. Yeah.
No, I don't need it. No, I don't need it anymore. I just need killing. Lots of it. That's all I was ever... That was what I was born to do. What I will die doing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll get that one day. Maybe.
That's what I want. Like, I know nobody else fucking... They're like... fucking Last of Us fans.
Joel, you can't do that to Joel.
Yeah, one of those ones. But it's like... We actually got through on those. I still would love to have... There's a straight up, like, manga sequel to it. Or, I mean, a comic book sequel. You know, Not anything else, no other adaptations, straight up in black and white, no color shit, like, old school. I know that's always just, like, sometimes a tougher sell, but, you know, that would be awesome. Even if it was just one book, that's it. I'm not asking much. It could be one thick book, that'd be cool, you know, but just something to kind of go along with it. The only downfall is now it's that weird thing that it's probably been too long. Sometimes you wait a little bit too much to do a sequel, and there can be that kind of weird, like, 20-year gap, and you're like, oh, now it's just... Not really the same thing anymore.
To some extent, this does kind of work as a sequel because it is Scott from the future that pulls in. Because, you know, we've never explained really because the whole thing is Scott thought they were broken up, but they were just taking a break. And then, like, you know, Ramona learns, because it's kind of, this is a little bit more of Ramona's story. She learns that, like, oh, I just got to kind of love myself and, like, still be conscious of people around me and the feelings of people around me, but still just kind of learn to love myself and stop hating myself for how I treated these people, and kind of embraces herself in that. And then from there, it ends on a note of, like, okay, so we'll probably have a better future. Nothing's guaranteed they're going to be forever, but the future's looking bright at least. Yeah. And it ends on a note, not a totally a cliffhanger, but something implying that Gideon is gone evil again, and Julie is evil too, because she thinks dating assholes is hot. So it's one of those things where they could continue this into the sequel, and I think that's the reason why, because if you say we're doing a Scott Pilgrim sequel and it's going to be black and white, people would show up for that, but I think what they did was really smart in hindsight, and then right in hindsight, in retrospect, where it's just like, okay, we're going to sell it like it's a reenactment of the comic, and then you watch it and like, oh, it's not. Oh, this is... It's kind of, you're doing something different. Oh, wait, no, this is a sequel, but also kind of a reboot at the same time. So, you know, who knows? I think you could, I wouldn't mind seeing a second season. Like, I don't need it, but I wouldn't mind seeing one.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd be totally down. Like I said, I overall really enjoyed this, you know. At first, you kind of have that iffy feeling like, let's see here. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, no, it's pretty good. And, yeah, the way the characters were dialed in, I did enjoy it quite a bit.
Well, it also comes from an aspect, and I'm not going to speculate on the personal life of someone I don't know, but like Brian Lee O'Malley at one point was married and later got divorced, so I wonder if some aspect of that is kind of like reflecting back on like, okay, not saying like I was training by myself and never, not like that, but I guess just that idea of like, trying to be a little bit more, because Scott Pilgrim ends on the note of like, we're young and we're in love, and then you know, later you get older and you're like, it's not as magical as that, you still got the rest of your life ahead of you, what the fuck is this shit, you know? So it's kind of like, I think it's probably looking back on that with some aspect of like, still end optimistically, but let's also be realistic, nothing's for certain.
It's not like where it cuts to like American Graffiti 2 and then like Ron Howard walks in and he's got the fucking mustache on, the kids are screaming in the house, and he's like, you didn't pay the fucking bill, what the hell?
I never seen American Graffiti 2, is that how it opens?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much. Ron Howard and whatever the chick is in American Graffiti have this big old blowout argument in front of this like screaming baby, and it's like, what is it? It's like starting scene of the movie. And it's told in like three. It's really actually a very interesting filmmaker's movie because it's told
it's
in like.
It's not by Lucas himself.
He wrote it, but he didn't. He did the classic George Lucas thing. He sent it like a three page like overview.
You figure the shit out.
Put this together here. But then it's done by like, there's like three characters. So there's the Ron Howard story in a sense. Then there's the dude that goes to Vietnam who, they already told you he died in the fucking end credits of the other one, so you know that's just coming.
Yeah.
And even though he gets away. Sequel.
Does he actually get away in the sequel?
Yeah, he does.
So they actually show him in Nam?
Yeah. So it's a Vietnam movie, and then there's a... The third one's the...
The guy who dies in an auto wreck or whatever.
Yeah, that guy. So he's doing the auto racing and so on like that.
Does he die?
I think he does. But then it's like each one's shot differently. Like they shoot one... Like the Vietnam one's shot like in like 3x4 because of like, so it looks like TV footage. You know, the Ron Howard one's shot just like a normal movie and so on like that, and then...
Is this even a fucking comedy like the first one?
It's sort of. It's still dramedy.
You see the way he took off that Viet Cong's ear? We were laughing. What?
It's interesting. It's not as good as the original one, but that's why I just pictured the Ramona or like the Scott Pilgrim 2. For some reason, Scott just has a big old mustache. Yeah.
Well, it's also why I just think it's funny.
Jesus
when
Jesus fucking Christ, Ramona!
Well, I want to say even older Scott when he's like all... old Ryu'd out with the headband and all that. I want to say that's roughly the age of what Brian Lee O'Malley is now, I think. So
he's like 10 years old now. I think he's born in 79.
So I think he's like
79? I don't know. I just throw out real specific.
So mid or late 40s, I think. Because I looked up his Wikipedia, and for some reason, 47 stands out to me. I don't know why.
Because he's perfect example. He's like that last generation of... Gen X.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think it ends at 81, so it's like, that's why I feel like, that's who he's writing really, like, straight as, because, you know, that's like one of those weird ones where, like, he's actually writing Scott Pilgrim, like, at that exact age. It's not like one of those ones like, oh, I can't remember what it was like to be the youth back in the day. You know?
Oh, me, Brian Lee O'Malley! Oh!
Brian Lee O'Malley's Tales of Canada.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd check out another Scott Pilgrim thing, you know. At the same time, though, I mean, yeah, we'll just have to see if anything does come of it, because it's getting good reviews, and I think it's getting a lot of plays.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones that, like, I think there's the thing is there's a core audience for Scott Pilgrim that's always been real strong. That's the one kind of nice thing.
Well, I think it's a lot of, like, for a lot of people, it was their first, like, sort of independent comic book to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Or it was the first, like, comic we said earlier, which kind of, like, reached out to people specifically in that age demographic at the time.
Yeah, well, I think it's just that thing. It's that it's one of those first ones that kind of hit the video game audience.
Yeah.
The video game anime audience that, you know, almost in a weird way didn't feel like they had kind of a voice in something for a while, and then it's like, oh, here it is. Here's that world that, you know.
It does feel weird, though, because, I mean, when you think about it, yeah, you just do the math, it makes sense. But sometimes when I look into this kind of thing, like, I think about creators I like, or like, directors, writers, whatever, and I think about when they made this thing. And then I think, like, oh, well, they were young, or whatever, so I think this should be fine. But then, like, but then you do the math and be like, wait, they're like 50 now? And then you do the math in your head, like, oh, that's how time works in this way. So, like, wait, so the time it took for me to first see this thing, where he would have been in his early 30s or whatever, this many years later, now he's almost 50. Fuck! You know, just like one of those things, because I want to say he was probably in his early or mid-30s when the movie got made.
Yeah.
And then you do the math, like, how long ago the movie was made, and then you look at this, like, fuck, yeah, we're all going to die one day. That's right. I forgot for a minute.
Well, you could be like John Hughes, and he made those movies, like, the, you know, all those ones that he kind of did, like, in his 40s, I think.
Yeah.
All, like, his teen comedy. So, you know, you can still do your teen comedy stuff later in life.
Well, I'm not saying that you can't do, like, I'm not saying anything about, like, what you can
do your fucking yaoi teen comedies, like, when the time comes.
I need my yaoi teen comedies, yes. No, I'm not saying, like, oh, the authenticness feels real. I guess there's a little bit of me, like, I feel like Scott Pilgrim, the retro anime-ness of it, the retro anime-ness and the retro video game shit works for its audience. However, at the same time, I feel like that's something you have to make now, because I feel like in like 10 years, if you were to come out with something like Scott Pilgrim, like, all right, who gives a shit? This is for like old millennials that are like in their like fucking 40s, the like early 40s to early 50s. What the fuck is that? You know what I mean?
Well, because the thing about it is Scott Pilgrim already has like that retro-ness to it as is. So in 2003, it already has the throwback feel. Because it's like all their stuff he's referencing are like things in like the 80s and 70s. I mean, look at shit. Young Neil Young. Like, yeah, I mean, you know what I mean?
Steven Stills.
Yeah, like, so there's so much stuff in there that, like, because, I mean, that's the stuff that, I think that's the problem I always have. I feel like I bring this up on podcasts all the time, but, like, the older we get in life, is like, I like stuff that was so already old as is, so now that stuff's like 60, 70 years old, which makes me feel like I'm fucking 60 or 70, because it's like, that's like what I was into, and now that stuff's all, you know, you're like, oh, I'm losing all my favorite actors and so on like that. Like, how old are they? They're like 88 years old.
What's this Doja Cat the youth speak of?
Yeah. Oh, she was in Fast and the Furious? Oh, that was weird.
Oh, she was? I didn't know.
She was in Fast Furious 10. That's the only reason I know what she looks like.
I just said a random name.
It's like, that's the only way I know what music or, like, certain people, like, look like is because they appear in a movie.
Well, back when you were a DJ, I guess you were at least, like, tuned in to what the kids like, because you'd get their request. But then at the same time, though, I guess there's also that thing of, like, I was thinking a little bit ago, like, I think that, like, it would suck living, like, in, like, a young person, like, small college town. Like, say something like Los Angeles or
Chico.
Something like Los Angeles or San Francisco. It's big enough that, yes, there's a university there, but they're big enough there's other things around there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That you're not always interacting with the youth. But, like, I say, like, the youth.
It's not like being in Berkeley, where, like, there's two types of people in Berkeley. There's college kids and old hippies that have never been able to figure out how to get off the street.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that type of shit. So it's, like, kind of like, you know, I almost feel like, I guess you could be like that old aging hippie that just is happy being surrounded, like feeling like you're in Neverland, or like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused or whatever. But I feel like that would get depressing after a while, because when you're in your 20s, like, that's fucking awesome, you know, but then 30s, like, okay, but I feel a little kind of older and I'm not as cool as I used to be, I guess. And, you know, I just imagine that's what that would feel like somewhere like Chico or like Ashland, Oregon, or something like cool college towns.
Yeah.
But they're probably just cool to visit and then get the fuck out, because you're going to feel like an old man, like, surrounded with no one to connect to, you know?
Well, I think the thing, too, is because it's not going to have the same things that, like, you picture as, like, youth. It's not like it's going to be filled with arcades and fucking all kinds of fun shit and video game stores and record stores and all that kind of stuff. You kind of go, oh, no, it's going to have none of that there, because they're into completely different stuff.
So this vape shit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The only people I think it works for is, but then you can be that guy who's like 40 years old who like tries to act youthful and.
I had like
out there at the vape store hanging out in the corner, like, hey, what's going on?
I know you used San Francisco as an example, but I had like one of those. You talk about like Berkeley has people who are like young and then old hippies who try to be young. I had like an old.
I don't know if they try to be young. They still look like they just like they're like dressing like it's 1969, except for they're now 72.
They'll be like, I dated a black girl once. I'm hip with the times. Yeah, exactly.
She got pregnant. I dumped her on the side of the street. You know?
It's just what we did back in 72. Yeah. You still had to fight the cause, you know? You couldn't be bogged down by something like a child.
Trivial.
Yeah. But, like, it would be like shit. Like, I had a guy, like, in my building in San Francisco, and I wasn't living by the college or anything like that. There's an old hippie guy that always, like, had crazy fucked up eyebrows. That's what I really remember about him. And, like almost anime-level eyebrows stuck out, you know?
If you put glasses on, they'd have the swirlies in them.
Kind of. Well, he would always be, you know, you'd talk to him for a minute, but he'd always be looking for a reason to hang out or talk or something. Or if there's anything wrong with the building, we had to act. We had to act, like, because this is like, hell no, we won't go, man. We got to act now. This is, you're like, okay, yeah, we can act. Our landlord sucks, but, you know, just like, what are we doing right now? Right now, I'm trying to take a shit, you know? Well, we got to talk soon. Like, all right, I'll let you know.
He's like sliding a pamphlet underneath the door.
No, like, he was like, fucker was like, I was like in the bathroom, which wasn't far from the front door. He's just like, we need to talk. I'm like, I can't talk right now.
He just unlocks the door. He's like, I got a key to your apartment. Don't worry about it.
He's like, we got to talk. Like, I can't talk right now. It's really important. Like, well, I got to take a shit. And I'm in the middle of that right now.
He fucking opens the bathroom door. Just sits there on the toilet. He's like, here, let me show you the pamphlets I've been working on.
Well, it'd be like that kind of shit. Like, he'd always just, if there's something wrong with the building, he had to just go up the stairs. Yeah. Like, suddenly runs really fast. And he has to try, like, oh, cool. We got to interact about something. Like, oh, fuck. Yes, I know the front door is a little creaky. I know. What the fuck do you want me to do about it? We gotta do something! I guess the something is you sitting in my fucking, in my kitchen trying to talk to me about this and then leading on to something else. Okay. I'm sorry, this got very much about me. But I feel like those are the fucking people that like to live in Berkeley. You know, that aren't young.
That's why. I feel like all the young people like realize that they're like, you know, if we could just get rid of all these old people on the street, would be better.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think any of the kids there at Berkeley are going like, you know what I like is these old hippie people that just try to like hawk shit and stand naked on the side of the fucking road. Like,
yeah.
I don't think any of them like that. They're like, you know what? We're doing it. We got rid of all the youthful hippies. If we cleanse the rest of them out of here, Berkeley will be all ours.
Yes. Yes, they'll be very much of just. I just.
Then the hive mind can work together to try to capture California.
Yes, slowly, but surely we will spread.
You know? Just some fucking gigantic, like, insect creature sitting inside, like, the temple part of Berkeley there, yeah. Like, oh, sending out its cues to all its students.
Berkeley had some cool comic book stores.
When I was a kid, Berkeley had really cool fucking stores. Like, back in the good old early 2000 Scott Pilgrim days, yeah. We reference to that, when you could go to a town and it had all kinds of neat shit still, like, Berkeley was one of those ones where I was almost really impressed. I'm like, it has my favorite Amiibo one, not anymore, but, you know, back in the day, like, the Amiibo was, like, really sweet there. You know, it had a bunch of comic book stores, video game stores, all kinds of neat novelty stuff back before kind of like pre-internet kind of stuff. It had awesome things. It was totally cool. You know, nowadays you go there, it's like, eh. Like anything else, it's like, eh. Rasputin's is like still kind of there, but it sucks and the prices aren't right and the things are too used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I miss Rasputin's.
I miss Rasputin's in San Francisco.
I miss what it used to be. And, you know, it's not really entirely Rasputin or Amoeba's fault. It's literally times, and who's bringing the shit in? Who's really selling it? And how quickly does that shit go out the door? They're really at the mercy of that.
Hey, God, it's like one of those ones when I look at the glory days of Rasputin's in the 2000s in San Francisco. Five stories of pure entertainment coming at you. You got LPs, you got CDs, you got VHS and DVDs. You know, there was so much. I can't remember what one of the floors was, but it was awesome too.
I remember one of the floors on the TV, because they always have like a movie or something playing. They had like the Suicide Squad episode of Justice League Unlimited, like Fuck yeah. All right.
That's what I mean. There's always cool stuff in there, and the prices were still decent enough. I mean, maybe not amazing, but the selection made up for it. Mm-hmm. I used to spend so much time in there, and, you know, you go in the elevator, and it always smelled like pizza because of that pizzeria down below. I always felt bad for the poor guy that had to work in there all the time. He was like, I crave pizza no more.
Yeah, I imagine that job would do it to you.
Yeah, no, but, like, it's one of those ones, like and that's the thing, it's like, that's almost like that old Scott Pilgrim. See, that's the thing, is that Scott Pilgrim, I think that's the thing about it, is it captures just that time period so well of being like, there's the video store, there's the record store, there's concerts you can kind of go out to, and they still kind of feel a little bit more like part of, like, the area. It's not just kind of like, they don't feel so removed like they kind of do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things feel like a lot more tight-knit. It makes Toronto sound fucking amazing. It's probably not nearly as cool. That's what I thought. I was like, dude, Toronto's got to be amazing when reading this. And I'm like, I know what's going to happen. I would go there. It would be, like, half as cool as this.
A lot of those places in the comics shut down or
whatever. Yeah, or never exist in the first place because he's like, this is what I wish it was like. You know? Because you always kind of, there's two things when you read sort of something as a book or a story. You kind of go, are they just kind of going, this is 100% like what my memory is of the place and this is exactly what it was? Or this is like, man, this is what I so wish my town was.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to be fucking mayor of Sim City here. You know, one of those kind of things. But I know, that's so one thing. It's like, I know we feel like we bring it up all the time, but it keeps coming up all the time. But it's just like, you know, just like that. With, like, the crash of, like, the physical media and all that stuff. It's a weird one because you're like...
Now Scott Pilgrim's streaming, so there you go.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's, like, one of those ones. It's, like, that thing that, like... It's that we want books, you know. It's that thing. You think about a book. A book is, you're holding a retro piece of technology when you hold a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not practical. It's like, the backwoods way of, like, reading, in a sense. You know, it's that weird thing when you think of it like that, but that's truly what it is. You know, There's no point for anybody to ever own a book again.
But it feels better having it.
I like books. I'm saying this as someone who likes books, you know, but, like, that's kind of the weird thing. We're at this, like, age where you could see where the youth would be kind of like, oh, well, what's the point of having it? I mean, you could have this Kindle tablet over here and it's got, you know, 10 billion books on it.
I like how they talk like a father, like, trying to take his kid to soccer practice. Well, let me tell you, kiddo. You see, the kick ain't right, you know?
Yeah, kicking's not right. Here's my training manual from 1962.
Yeah. I think...
Why the pages stuck together? I don't mind that.
They draw the calves really nicely, yeah. The musculature looks great. You know, I know, the illustration. Just
yeah,
the
pin, is that why you always ship. Lay down on the grass sideways of your head looking straight, like, calf level? You always like it best when, like, one of the kids forgets his, like, you know, shin guards.
Oh, I was keeping it to adults. I guess we're going there.
No, I'm making sure your form's good, damn it. Don't call me some kind of pervert.
No, it's one of those things, like, I don't know, like anything, I think that you get some people, like, we were just talking about different ends of a generation, and I think when we think of, like, you know, a younger person, it's like, you know, like, I guess would fall into Zoomer or whatever. We think of, like, the properly, like, clean shaven, uptight, you know, like, you know, has, like, doesn't, like, is afraid to offend anybody by anything they say. But, you know, after working with people in that age range for long enough, like, I see plenty that are just, like, almost seem like us, just, like, you know, a few years younger, really. So it's anything, it's any end, it's any spectrum. I think it's just easy for us to kind of, like, really boil down, like, everything that annoys us about this generation into this.
Oh yeah, well, really, I'm not saying it literally has nothing to do with, like, that kind of part of it, because the thing is
the owning the you mean the yeah, owning, I mean, like, the owning aspects. I mean, I know
old people don't own stuff, young people don't own, most people don't own things. Like, that's the thing about this point nowadays. It's like, unless you're really into, like, retro nostalgic, like, technology, you don't own stuff, you know what I mean?
I feel like, well, I don't really have as much of a need to go own every, like, I used to own every Blu-ray or every DVD or every CD of anything that I mildly like. There's a point where I did, but I don't really feel the need for that anymore. Something I really like that I think might be hard to come across, or something I really like, I will, or if it's something that I think might be hard to come across later, I will. Mm. But on average, I feel like it's, you know, it depends on the person, like anything. I mean, some aspects, we talked about this before, it's easy. Some stuff is easy to get. Some stuff, it's, like, I feel like there's shit that they really want you to see. So we're going to see whatever newest movie comes out, because that's what's on the streaming service. But older shit, it's harder to find in that aspect.
Well, that's my biggest thing. That's why I still buy so much, is because you just can't find them on any of the streaming things. And, you know, so yeah. You know, if they offered a more, you know, on there, that would be, you know, I'm not opposed to digital. As I said, I own like 500 digital copies of stuff, but, you know, it is one of those ones that, yeah, it's just kind of, it's more just a weird time because it's like this is how I was built. This is how I was raised for all my life. And it's like, without this, I don't know what I am anymore. it's like one of those ones, like, owning all these trophies, like an Olympic thing. And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, they're getting rid of that sport in the Olympics. Like,
We're melting them down.
Yeah, we have to take your trophies, too, because we don't want people to know that it ever existed. Well, why is that? Well, Adolf Hitler thought it would be a good sport for the Olympics, and that's why we're getting rid of it now. But I was a champion Czechoslovakia, like, you can't take that away from me.
Yeah, it's like any number of things, I guess, you know, just some things. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I just feel like in 20 years it'll be interesting to see, because it'll be like, you know, the average person's home will include none of this stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just will not see houses that have that bookshelves. They won't have, you know, collections of, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, between music, movies, books, yada, 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 all that stuff is not going to exist. It almost doesn't exist at the moment. You know, you can go to a lot of people's houses and you don't see a single, like, soul of that kind of stuff in there. You know, but 20 years from now, I feel like the average person's house will have none of it. Maybe if you looked in, like, their attic, there might be a box of it still left over and so on like that, but...
Well, be something to the effect of, like, you go to, like, older people's house and I'm realizing, I'm talking about most people, I know you have this too, but like, you go to older people's house and you see like, oh, grandma and grandpa still have their collection of like VHSs or like old records like stacked back here, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of crumb up, you know, so I think it'll be kind of like, that's just what, that's going to be the future of Blu-rays and DVDs, just any number, which, I don't know, that's just, I don't know. Once like streaming started happening, like, I guess this is the direction we're going in now, you know?
Yeah, no, and it's one of those ones. As I said, like, it definitely works. I just wish it would have the selection. That's my like, complaint. If it was like Spotify, because that's the thing, Spotify pretty much ixnayed like the need to own generally CDs, you know? Like, you can pretty much find 98% of stuff on there. The only things I can't sometimes find is like, there'll be certain soundtrack albums that like won't be on there. And it's like, whatever, if I have to buy like one here and there, like the Scarface soundtrack, like, you know, I'll do it. But if somebody would come up with something like that, that was like, you pretty much, let's just say, if you had at least about 90% chance that any movie from 2010 and back was guaranteed to pretty much be on there, cool. Like, let the different streaming sites like fight over the new movies. I'm fine with that. But, like, if there was just something that played all the old movies and, like, you paid just a flat rate of, like, I don't know, I don't care how much it is, $20 to $50, as long as it just had everything on it and you didn't have to worry about, like, you know, hunting and pecking through that kind of stuff and then just realizing it's just easier to go get the Blu-ray or DVD of it, or VHS sometimes.
Well, without trying to be, you know, the kind of, like, capitalism and greed is the thing always wrong with it, which, you know, without trying to sound like just repeating that kind of shit, but at the exact same time, I mean, really, people we really often have to blame are just kind of like the execs of these companies, because they just want what makes they want what makes immediate money. They don't want to build up to anything. They want it here. They want it now. Or if they're going to put something into it, it's got to be guaranteed. So that's the reason why this is taking up server space. Get rid of these classic movies, or get rid of this thing that's really, I mean, you know, I know that we were selling this service with the promise of these things over here, and they already paid into it, but fuck them. We're going to distribute out everywhere. Like, why is DC stuff being distributed among everywhere now? So that's one reason, I think, to still have physical stuff, just because you can't trust these fucks and what they're going to do with the things they promised you back when you subscribed to the shit. So, like South Park, I go, oh, cool, so HBO Max has all this stuff and also has South Park, and then after a year, oh, South Park's going back to Paramount. Well, why with the fuck? Okay.
Yeah, why wasn't it just there DC, from the beginning? Like,
yeah, and then, like, DC's like, oh, well, DC's here, but it's also going to be distributed among everything else. Like, all right, why the fuck? Okay, you know, now it's just like, so it's kind of like any number of things, like, just buy the shit you like, and then hopefully, you know, hopefully there'll be a generator when the world ends to watch it on.
Yeah, exactly. We just need, like, a communist fucking streaming service that just keeps it all together. Like,
comrade streaming?
Yeah. For the union, you know, one of these ones where it's just, like, movies for everybody, you know. Nobody gets, you know, treated any differently
A streaming service for the proletariat?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We just need more of that kind of stuff. But,
yeah.
I don't know. it's still interesting. 20 years from now, we'll see what happens with Scott Pilgrim. We'll see what happens with DVDs and all that good stuff, or physical media, you know. But, yeah, interesting roads ahead, you know. They'll work it all out at some point. Yeah. But till then, go to oldmanorange.com for more podcasts, comic books like Pizza Boys and all that other fun stuff we got on there. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes.
And I'm Ryan Dunnigan.
And we'll see you some other time.
Later, folks.